the committee to order. And since how we have a quorum, I would like to, let's see, President Norton, I know you looked over the minutes and I found them in order and like to move them today.
I did indeed, and I would move the minutes.
Thank you. All those in favor of adopting the minutes from February 28th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? They pass. Got a couple of announcements. Obviously, I told the students from Burnsville here that they need to turn off their cell phones. I'll remind our members to turn off their cell phones and to speak into the microphones so that we get recorded. I want to make sure that everyone knows about the bio on the Hill, which is one of my goals, is to kind of inform other legislators about the importance of bioindustry in the state of Minnesota. And on March 14th from 11 till 2 in the Great Hall of the state capitol, Representative Beard, myself, Senator Metzen, and Senator Rosen are inviting all the members and staff to join us for kind of a preview of what kind of industries we have in the state and what our state is trying to accomplish and how important it is for our economic growth and well-being. Then we have the Sandra National Labs presentation on March 20th. This is a pretty exciting opportunity. Representative Winkler has and Burns put this bill together for the Biobusiness Alliance to create a modeling program for computers that we heard about several weeks ago. And I hope we extend to all of our colleagues and get them to show up here. This is a something that can be used not only just in the bioindustry, but it can be used throughout, whether it's timber or agriculture or manufacturing. And then next week, March 21st, we've had the discussion here a couple of times about what kind of recommendations we're going to make from this committee to the finance committees. Hopefully we will have that discussion in committee on the 21st of March. Having said all that, I'm going to move on. Yes.
Thanks for bringing these up. First of all, the bio on the Hill that you and I are inviting people to get, remind me of what day I'm inviting them. I missed that date again.
You are inviting them on March 14th from 11 till 2 a.m.
Here in this?
No, it's in the Great Hall over in the State Capitol. And we're going to try and get senators and representatives all to take a wander down there. And we're having coffee and cookies and juice and all on the committee, I think it is.
And one more question, if I may, housekeeping type question, Mr. Chairman. March 21st, we're going to come back and start talking about all the marvelous bills we've heard and great things that are going on. Is it going to be our intention to have like a committee bill go out of here, or are we going to recommend them individually from this committee to their next stop?
I think that we'll have to take a look at where these bills have to go. There's a couple that go to taxes, but most of them go over to
capital investment.
Over to
higher ed.
Okay.
Thank you, somebody, for that. So it just depends on where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
We may just prioritize the bills, and we've already recommended that they be moved. Yeah, but we will try and prioritize the bills that we have heard. You don't really have to move them anywhere. We've already moved them.
Mm-hmm.
So that we as a committee, if we come to this agreement, we can gently prod our the finance chairs of what we think are good ideas.
Okay.
Unfortunately, for this committee, I really wanted to hear this bill because Representative Pepin, Representative Haas have worked on this for a while to kind of come up with another idea from some things, and I have a committee hearing. I have a bill up in Karen Clark's Housing Committee that I've been working on for about a year and a half. So So I want to apologize to the committee. I want to apologize to you and to your testifiers. I think this is an important bill, and I hope it gets a very good hearing and good reception here. The idea, and I hope I'm not giving away any secrets, but it's more of a marketing bill for our more rural, but not limited to rural areas, non-urban seven-county metro areas. I think it's a great idea, and I hope it gets a high priority on the 21st of March, too. So with that being said, I'd like to pass the... I'll just get up and you can move. Or you can... whatever.
Well, the first bill we're going to be hearing today is House File 1631. Representative Hawes, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move a bill, and I have an oral amendment.
Okay. Representative Hawes is going to move House File 1631. And would you like to give us your oral amendment?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Line 1.17 or line 17, I would like to do... after institution, I would like to have you delete and insert or.
Okay.
That widens the range a little bit of who you should be concentrating on. The other is a pretty good idea, except when you start trying to fit in important, such as maybe Rochester probably wouldn't qualify, you know. So we probably should switch it around, loosen it up some.
Okay, so the chair should also be behind this amendment, which is line 1.17, after the words institution, cross out and insert the word or to your technical or community college. So we would like to move recommendation or House File 1631 to be recommended to pass with amendments and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Hawes, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you very much. As we were talking, I think at our first meeting that we met, and we were talking just a little bit of the biozones past our path, and I kind of give a growl that says, and St. Cloud could be a biozone. And I could list out 14 or 15 real solid reasons why they could in an established criteria. One we just erased. We do have a four-year and a two-year. We do have medical. We do have connections to 14 or 15 industries and commercials. We actually have, in a brochure that was passed out today, a science initiative of Central Minnesota, which everybody is tied in from. But what happens with that concept is you start the outstate and other cities competing amongst themselves for the prize. And what should the prize be? The prize should be Minnesota as a bioscience state. And so we came into an alternate of actually putting marketing dollars in so that the state could market Minnesota and their communities, both the metro communities and outstate communities that are meeting some substantial criteria, and that they could be marketed within the world. Now, we can compete in our area, but I don't think we have the ability to market our area throughout the world. In this bill, you'll find that we front-loaded it on $1 million each year for the next 3 years. I think a heavy front load is important. I don't think $1 million is magical, but I think it has to be significant. I think it should have to go over a three-year period, because I think it's going to take some time to get traction and make a difference. I do not mind coming back or somebody coming back within 3 years and say, this is how it works. Maybe it should be in the base. But I think maybe we should be forced to come back at that time, or whoever's interested in the bill at that time. It also could potentially tie to Job Z's and the money already established in some of those areas if Job Z's gets continued. I do have a testifier today Would you wish to hear from my testifier?
Yes, I would. Representative Haas, if you'd introduce your testifier, let him introduce himself into the record.
It's Mr. Moore, a long personal friend. I coached most of the St. Cloud area. The winners I remember, and Tom was a winner. So I'm going to have him identify himself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Moore. I'm president of the St. Cloud Area Economic Development Partnership. We're a regional public-private nonprofit organization serving the greater St. Cloud area of central Minnesota. We have 24 members and 17 associate members, including Stearns, Benton, and Sherburne counties, and the cities of St. Cloud, Sartell, Stock Rapids, Wake Park, St. Joe, and Becker. Along with all of the area utilities, colleges and universities, the healthcare systems, the St. Cloud Area Chamber of Commerce, the Initiative Foundation, plus many area financial institutions, commercial builders, and organizations that just have a general interest in the economic vitality of the St. Cloud and central Minnesota area. The partnership's mission is to generate high-quality jobs and increase the tax base by promoting and facilitating the growth of existing businesses and the development of new businesses. We have a very aggressive business retention and expansion program through which our teams of community leaders regularly meet with CEOs, plant managers, and owners of over 100 of the region's largest area employers each year. We identify major issues of concern and put them in touch with a variety of local, regional, and statewide resources in an effort to help them remain in business and expand here in Minnesota. The partnership was instrumental in assisting the area in providing a joint six-city application for the Bioscience Zone program earlier. And I do want to mention that with us this morning, just showing support, is Shauna Johnson, who is the city administrator for the city of Wake Park, is here with us today. Representative Haas' bill helps us in a number of different ways as a state. It helps us think strategically. We can't rely on the medical device cluster that we have presently. We need to help grow that industry. And we also need to help the cities in the state of Minnesota work together. We don't have a corner on this market, as Representative Haas indicated. Other states, other countries are also promoting this industry in their areas, and we need to be able to compete with them. Minnesota has a great story to tell as far as bioscience and the science-based businesses, and we don't think that we have very many people telling that story. I think this bill will help the Department of Employment and Economic Development tell our story. We think the skills in outstate Minnesota connected to the higher educational institutions can help the medical device industry, and that they're also transferable to other companies. The University of Minnesota and the Mayo Clinic have bioscience zones located next to them. They are going to continue to help this industry grow and prosper. We want to keep those manufacturing jobs that they do the research for and help develop a product for. We want to keep those jobs in the state of Minnesota. This bill emphasizes greater Minnesota, but doesn't exclude the seven-county Twin Cities metropolitan area. And as I mentioned, it helps connect bioscience companies to higher educational institutions throughout the state of Minnesota. I think I'll end my comments there and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I think before we move forward, I'd like to formally adopt the author's amendment. We didn't take formal action on that, so I'd like to do that. All those in favor, if there's any discussion first, I didn't anticipate any. All those in favor of supporting the author's amendment as we read earlier, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. The amendment has passed. And now I think we could entertain questions of either Representative Haas or his testifier, Mr. Moore. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Moore, I don't remember the name, but I can see you're wearing a pin with a tagline on there. Could you?
Positively Minnesota.
Positively Minnesota. It reminds me of a conversation I had with Commissioner McElroy when we were touring the St. Jude facility. He was mentioning, I think, Moorhead as one of the places where there is, you know, there's sort of the beginnings of a bioscience business cluster there.
and he was talking about the need for marketing and that Deed had some plans to do so. I guess my question is this bill part of a larger Deed initiative? Are they doing this already? How does this kind of fit into what their plans are?
Mr. Moore,
this is to Mr. Moore or to Representative Haas. The button was to Mr. Moore. But
I can give you an opinion, but I cannot guarantee that it's a fact. I think in the governor's budget, I think there's $200,000 for marketing, but I don't think it's specifically for bioscience. Although Mr. Moore has worked with and we've had the Deed people in our office, and they know of this bill and have made some recommendations for it.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, that's my understanding as well. There is a bill that's in the Deed's purview, supported by the governor, for $200,000 for marketing. Representative Haas is correct in that it doesn't target or specifically address bioscience. It's their whole marketing budget.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering how many communities would qualify for this? Any idea what particular communities?
I don't think that has been calculated right now, especially with when I took from ANDA to an OR, because that really opened the door. I can give you an opinion and not a fact. My opinion would be that there will be close to 50 communities very, very interested in this, because I believe there was 50 communities trying to apply for the bioscience grants.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Members, any other questions? It does appear that there's $1 million for the next 3 years, which is a substantial increase over the Deed's $200,000 budget, which I think Representative Winkler pointed out, which was for all marketing. But I'm thinking that will be dealt with in the next committee when they talk about finances. So I think for the purposes of this committee, I think we're dealing mostly with the concept and the policy. And if you're ready for the question, Representative Haas, would you like to move?
I would so move our House File, is it 1631 as amended?
1631 as amended, that's correct. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And thank you. And I think we need to add on that, as I mentioned earlier, the bill will go to the Finance Committee. Representative Haas and Mr. Moore, thank you so much for coming to testify.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We do have another bill to be heard today, House File 1637. Representative Beard is going to go to the microphone. And I do believe this is on nanotechnology, and there is an author's amendment.
Madam Chair?
Representative Baird.
Where would you like this bill to go? And I'll be happy to move it along that direction. Is it going to finance next, or?
It looks to be going to finance, yes.
Looks like it's going to finance? Okay.
Representative Baird, you'd like to move House File?
1637.
Thank you very much.
Recommend to pass and be referred to finance.
And would you like to move your amendment at this time?
I would, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to move the 1637A2 amendment, which is in your packet, on line 3, Madam Chair. That will add paragraph A and then renumber. A, B, and C will become B, C, and D. So there will just be an additional paragraph in that section. And I'd move its adoption to put the bill in the shape for our discussion, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Beer has moved the amendment, which is 1637A2, to insert a new section under page 3, line 22. Is there any discussion? Okay. All in favor of the author's amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? And your amendment passes, and now we're on to your amended bill, and if you would like to speak to it and then introduce your guest.
I will, Madam Chair. First of all, this is the flu season in Minnesota, and So some of us get all choked up up here. It's not because we're emotional about the bill. It's because we're recovering from the pesky bronchial stuff that's going on. Yeah, stay back. Ward off this evil critter that's been going around the place. Madam Chair and members, in this fascinating committee we've been enjoying so far this year, we've heard of a lot of really good work and some really cool stuff that's coming down the pike. Biosciences and emerging technologies, I think, is something that we can bipartisanly get our minds, our arms, and our hearts around, because, as the governor's fond of saying, we are not in a race to the bottom. We are never going to be the cheapest screw turners, I think he's fond of saying, nor do we want to be, and I think we all agree with that. The heritage that we've been given in this state is that we're just a little better looking and a little brighter, I think. We like to think of ourselves that way anyhow, than all the other good folks around us, who are good folks too, but we like to think to work a little smarter and work a little more intelligently, and that's part of the legacy we've been given as we've taken over the governance of this state. And we talk about things in all kinds of the biosciences and emerging technologies. This bill, though, regarding nanotechnology, is a common thread that runs through all of the things that we've talked about so far. If you think about it, we've talked about some pretty high-powered brainiac-type stuff, but at its very fundamental level, it's very, very small. Everything we've dealt with, whether it's pharmacies, pharmaceuticals, or genomics, whether it's agricultural technologies, fuel technologies, and the things that are coming with energy, the different chemistries and just pure science that we've dealt with at the different universities and higher institutions, all deal with stuff on the atomic and molecular level. That's where nanotechnology comes into play, because it deals in every arena that we've looked at so far this year. This bill proposes establishing a special fund within the general fund and putting it under the Department of Employment and Economic Development so the deed commissioner can look for emerging companies that need to utilize nanotechnology, and there is some out there. I have today three presenters who are going to talk about the industry you probably don't know much about. I didn't know much about until I took this bill and visited with some of these good folks, but I think it's going to be fascinating. So I will arrange also, members, a field trip so that we can actually go and see some of this instrumentation in action, so we actually know what we're dealing with. We were hoping to do it Friday, but I know we're coming down to deadlines and we're all busy beyond belief with other important meetings also. So I think the Friday field trip will be off, but sometime here in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to try and find a spot where we can all pack up and run across town and see some really cool stuff and see some things through that instrumentation that you probably wouldn't believe you could actually see with your own eyes. Now I'm overspeaking the presentation of the bill, so without further ado, I'd like to introduce Mr. Darrell Gubrud, who's going to talk a little bit about the association, about the bill, and about what's going on in nanotechnology.
Thank you, Representative Beard, and welcome, Mr. Gubrud, and you're going to give us a little presentation, it looks like.
That's right. I'm the first of four presenters altogether.
Wonderful.
And
welcome.
I'm going to give you just a 2 or 3 minute overview of what nanotechnology is, and others will cover other topics.
Madam Chair. If I may, Mr. Gerber, spell his name for the tape, because there will be somebody transcribing this one more time. So.
G-U-B-R-U-D.
Thank you very much.
I've had to do that lots of times.
I'll bet you have. Thank you.
I'm the president of MinNano, and in a prior life I was CEO of technology organizations. And with much concern about Minnesota's competitiveness, which is how I became involved in nanotechnology. MinNano is an infant organization, all of 11 months old. It was founded by major Minnesota organizations that included Medtronic, Honeywell, Seagate, University of Minnesota, and others. And you'll hear more about it from one of the other presenters. I'm going to segue to just giving you a 2 minute thumbnail on nanotechnology. I got a hair. And that hair is 80,000 nanometers wide. Our eyes have a capability of seeing things down to a resolution of about 10,000 nanometers. So nanotechnology is dealing with things at a very small scale. And it's the invention of new instruments over the last 15 years or longer that permits researchers and industrial firms to deal with the subject. Let's see here. If you see where the arrow, can you see where the arrow is pointed to that very small dot where it says glucose is about 0.5 nanometers in diameter? If you look down here at the red circle, the protein is about 5 nanometers in diameter. A virus, which is the larger green circle, is about 50 nanometers in diameter. And a bacterium, which is the purple circle, is about 5,000 nanometers in diameter. What is nanotechnology? It involves probing, manipulating, and developing technologies at or near the atomic or molecular level of matter. And those matters, to the second point, can be synthetic, such as metals, computer chips, and plastics, or biological, as you've just seen. The matter can take on new characteristics, such as having much greater strength, thus reducing the weight and the size of the structure. It may take on a capability of conducting electricity, which it could not do before. And the bottom line is that industrial firms, manufacturing firms, virtually all of them in the state, can create products that have distinctive characteristics, and those firms can gain competitive advantage as a result. This illustrates one application. If you look at these little round circles where the arrow is pointed, those are an artist's illustration of something called gold nanoparticles. They can be coated with an antigen such that they seek out, and if you look down here at these molecules or cells, the gold nanoparticles have accumulated in the diseased areas of that organ. An outside power source such as infrared rays can be applied to those gold nanoparticles and kill those cells and leave the cells around it, which are healthy, unaffected. And I think you all know about chemotherapy and radiation therapy and the extent that that adversely affects the surrounding healthy cells. So this gives you one practical illustration, and the National Institutes of Health is investing hundreds of millions of dollars in nanotechnology with respect to cancer diagnosis and therapy, as an example. At this time, I'd like to introduce Karen Arnold, who is a principal in a early stage nanotechnology company, NanoCopia.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us, and if you two would state your name into the microphone, begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Karen Arnold, A-R-N-O-L-D. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, thank you so much for inviting us here today to talk about nanotechnology. And what I want to share with you is my company, NanoCopia. We're very small, and not to make a pun about the size of our company, we're 6 employees. We do drug formulation research and medical device coating research. So what we do is we take the functional benefits of making nanoparticles. We licensed the technology from the University of Minnesota. It was a process that was invented at the University of Minnesota, and that process enables us to make these nanoparticles. We can make nanoparticles of drugs. We can make nanoparticles coatings for medical devices. And the reason that these are important is because of the health benefits of being able to make things at that nanoscale. Daryl talked just a little minute ago about cancer therapeutics. I know everyone sitting at this table has been at some point in their life affected by cancer. You know somebody, or you have had experience with someone that's gone through chemotherapy and the awful drugs that make you sick in chemotherapy. One of the problems of chemotherapy drugs is that they're not very water soluble. Doctors can't predict how effective they're going to be at killing those cancer cells in our body. One of the things that have been studied is the ability to make those particles smaller, to nano-formulate those drugs, to make them more bioavailable, to make them more soluble so your body can use them better. What we do is we nano-formulate drugs like cancer therapeutics, high-value therapeutic drugs like that, to make them work better, to make them work more predictable, and we hope in the long run to make them more effective. What we do as a small company is we work with big company pharmaceutical partners to formulate their drugs. On the drug coating side of our business, what we do is we take drugs and we stick them on the surfaces of medical devices. Things like drug-coated stents. Everybody's read the articles about what's going on in drug therapy with stent coatings. Well, one of the problems is the materials that they're sticking onto those stents cause clots. So what we're doing is we're looking at novel ways of engineering those materials, making them stick better, making them come off faster. All of the things that address the problems with the coatings that are put on medical devices right now. As you can see on the pictures up there, if you take something, Daryl shows you a picture, or Daryl rips out a hair, well, I don't have any stents that I can rip out. But they're little tiny devices that are made of wires that, when they expand, they prop open those clogged arteries. Well, one of the problems with sticking coatings on things that have to be able to open up like that, they're very complex architecture. And so what we do by applying those little bitty nanoparticles onto those complex devices is a really exciting area of science and research. We have been very... Oh, how do I make this work here? Yep, let's finish. Sorry about that. One of the critical areas of being able to provide technology like that in both coatings and in formulations is to be able to characterize, to see what you've done with those materials. We use the characterization facility at the University of Minnesota in order to help us show that we've been able to achieve the specifications that we need with those materials. We've received a number of Small Business Innovation Research Grants, SBIR grants, from both the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes for Health that have funded our research in this area. Our ability to use those grants to pay for our work at the characterization facility is very important to us. One of the things that this bill does is allow access to other small companies that have not received the kind of grant support, because it's very unusual to get that kind of grant support, to have access to those very important facilities. If you can't prove what kind of coatings or what kind of formulations you've been able to develop, it doesn't matter. You don't have a product. Here's an example of some pictures that were taken from the characterization facility of different kinds of coatings that we can apply. The one on the left, that looks kind of like packed styrofoam, and what that is a individual nanoparticle discrete particle coating. The one on the right is a picture of a film that we've made using our process. So what has CareFact enabled us to do? It's enabled us to successfully compete for those grants. If we couldn't prove in the grants, when we submitted for those grants, that we were able to do these things, we wouldn't have gotten funding from the federal government. We have been able to collaborate with other researchers at the University of Minnesota, both in chemical engineering and the Department of Chemistry and the Cancer Center. It's enabled the university to collaborate with us. It's enabled us to be able to have access to those facilities that are so important to our research. The legislation that's being proposed can and really does make a difference to small Minnesota companies like ours. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I have one other testifier I'd like to present.
Certainly.
Mr. Rich Baker.
Welcome, Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. I'm here. I'm the representing MinNano, which is an industry group that has helped to put together this legislation. I'm Vice President of Engineering for MTS Systems in Eden Prairie, and I've worked the last 12 years in nanotechnology areas after receiving my PhD in material science. So, what you've heard today is that nanotechnology is important for Minnesota and for all the companies that are working in these areas. It's really the convergence of nanotechnology is a convergence of an emerging science for all industries. I probably don't have to convince this committee that this state has benefited from a leading position in research and technology, that has maintained and enhanced our quality of life. What we're proposing here is an early adoption of emerging science and trying to improve the transfer of technologies from laboratory to companies and industry into products. Small companies are often the vehicle that technology gets transferred, as you've heard by the previous presenter. This also leverages, we believe nanotechnology can leverage Minnesota's strength in many areas. The technology cuts across materials, electronics, energy, agriculture, food science, biotech, and biomedical technologies. I'm not sure what we left out, but it probably also is being affected by nanotechnology today.
Mr. Baker, I'm going to take just one moment to introduce some guests that have come in today, if you won't mind. We have 9th through 12th grade students who have just entered the hearing room today from Woodcrest Baptist School in Fridley. And they're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society Capitol Historic Visits, Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government. And they're having an educational day, and we hope you'll enjoy the finish of this testimony, which is on nanotechnology, your future. So welcome. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Mr. Baker, for your patience, and if you'd like to continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Minnesota Nano is a group of companies that got together because we believe that Minnesota needs to be the leader in nanotechnology, science, and engineering. That this will help us sustain and grow innovative nanotechnology applications, and that will lead to economic growth. The companies that founded MinNano are shown here, some well-known, some smaller companies, and the University of Minnesota. We are from very different industries, and yet we see value in putting our heads together, and these are the technical leads from all of these companies. You see Honeywell and Seagate, Integris, Goodrich, Medtronic, myself representing MTS, iMation, and RJA Dispersions, along with some of the leaders in research from the university, some of the deans. Independent of this legislation, we see value in us getting together and sharing ideas, sharing what we're working on, and how we might benefit from collaboration. And so this isn't a market failure that we're trying to address. The market is progressing well. But we see that we could do better, and we can benefit from each other's learnings and finding ways to share across industries, which is kind of unique. So we're really trying to build an ecosystem for companies to share information regarding nanotechnology. And this is a piece that will bring in small companies. The mission for Minnesota Nano is to advocate for increased interest and investment in nanoscale education, research, development, and commercialization. A lot of the investment is occurring within larger companies. We have other initiatives related to development and sharing across the two. This one will address education to some extent and also supporting smaller companies to make investments and to progress in nanotechnology. Thank you. Back over.
Thank you.
All right. Madam Chair, if I may, I just have a few concluding remarks before we stand for a few questions.
Please.
I think that, yes, there you go. Nanotechnology Development Fund for small Minnesota companies is important, I think, on a couple of levels. One is the instrumentation. It's pretty fantastic stuff, but it is hugely expensive. It's unlikely that an emerging company would go out and buy an atomic microscope, for instance. But there are a handful of them around the Twin Cities that can be rented. And this is one thing that I think this fund will help make this available to emerging companies for the research and development project with some of this instrumentation. It's not currently utilized to the extent that could truly benefit all the appropriate small companies. That's why I think I tip my hat to the group of existent companies that have formed the Minnesota High Tech Association, Minnesota Nanotech, that are proposing the Nanotechnology Development Fund, because they know that they've blazed the trail and they're commercializing these projects and these procedures. And the pond is big. There's a lot of non-competitive or places that they can play where they're not competing directly with each other, but they can really accentuate and compound their benefit to the state of Minnesota. The partnership with the state would confirm the state's commitment to Minnesota's competitiveness and quite likely reduce the time to market for Minnesota's products. The goal of creating the Nanotechnology Development Fund for small Minnesota companies is to further spur the use of this nano-instrumentation, and the expenditures of small companies would be matched one-to-one. I think this is one thing we have neglected to mention at this point. This is not all general fund money. It's proposed that the nanotechnology fund that we're going to be asking for in a moment, numbers are coming shortly, will be matched pretty much on a one-to-one basis from grants from private foundations and companies who have already blazed the trail for Minnesota industry. Let's see, this will be created fund administered through our friends over at Deed. Target largely or mainly businesses with less than 50 employees, although there is a provision in the bill we'll discuss in a moment from companies from 51 to 100 employees. We're looking at matching grants. We just spoke about that. And providing the grant monies also, and this is important. I think it's important for these young folks sitting right over here to our right, my right, whatever side it is for you, because we're going to need folks that know how to operate the instrumentation and actually do the work that sales and marketing and research people are asking for. So we're proposing that Deed also fund some internships, teaching young folks and students how to actually operate the equipment and how to fit in to this new exciting high-tech environment. I think that the intern process that's being proposed is one we should not overlook. I think the last slide actually talks about the money. You push that, Rich? There it is. Yes, we're looking at disbursements that would help with instrument rental, research and consulting, and the internships. The amendment we just adopted to put the bill in the shape that we would like to move it ahead with also provides for coordination and promotion budget for the department so that they can actually go out and identify the resources and the needs and help match them up. Work hand-in-hand pretty much with our friends at the Minnesota High Tech Association. Madam Chair and members, that's pretty much the presentation of the bill. If there is questions, I would certainly be happy to stand for them. And before I turn you loose, let me just reference the letters that are in your packets from the Minnesota High Tech Association and from Sage Electrochromatics, talking a little bit about why they think the bill is necessary and how they've benefited from the mentorship of some of the other Minnesota corporations that have put this fund together. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Members, do you have questions for any of the testifiers or Representative Beard on this initiative? And perhaps as they're thinking, since I don't see hand leaping up immediately, you could address the, and again, I know we're policy, not finance, but you have quite a few holes in here about dollar amounts to fill in. If you could address that a little bit, what do you, and then also you mentioned the 51 to 100 employees, mm-hmm. even though this is a small business initiative, could you address the 51 to 100 employee piece a little bit too? That's where some of the gaps in the little dotted lines seem to be.
Well, Madam Chair, while Mr. Gubrud is coming to speak to that, we had some internal discussion amongst ourselves as we were drafting this bill about just what would be a qualifying Minnesota company. And, you know, when you're dealing in the startup environment, you're oftentimes you don't have a corporate net worth unless you're an S-corp and you're putting your personal fortune on the line. You oftentimes don't have a profitability status. It would be a happy thing to have.
But oftentimes they're burning through startup capital. And so these were hard numbers to determine how to plug in. And in an odd kind of turning the tables, I thought I would because this is a policy committee, put the question back to this group and ask for your collective wisdom. I'm thinking, and I think the thinking of this group, is that we just have an employee number just for a reference point for deed at, say, 50 or less, and let's not pay attention to profitability or net worth, and let's trust the good judgment of the agency to pick and choose who they're going to make grants for. They're going to develop the grant application process, and, oh, by the way, every other year they have to come back and report to us on what they've done. So I have a hunch they're not going to run too far afield and be making grants, for instance, to our friends at 3M, although they're great folks. They're probably not in the same boat as somebody working out of their garage in, say, Rogers, for instance. And I think that we can trust their common sense to do that. That's my thinking. How are you folks feeling about that? So what I'm suggesting is that we just strike the lines, for instance, 2.7 and 2.8 and 2.1 and 1.24, and just leave employee numbers, for instance.
Members, does anybody have any?
If you want to ponder that while Mr. Gubrud speaks to it, we could ponder that for a moment.
Okay, that might be a good idea here, and let people get their head around that for a moment. Mr. Gubrud?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, as we've talked recently to small companies that might benefit by this in more detail, it's become increasingly clear that trying to have factors of other than employee count apply is going to unnecessarily complicate and bureaucratize the process for those companies applying and supplying the information that's needed. And so I think the notion that Representative Beard spoke to would coincide with the feedback we've gotten from the small companies and those of us in leadership roles at Nintendo to simplify it by focusing just on employee count. Second point, and that is that there is a provision in the bill for the Commissioner of Deed to authorize a participation for companies that may be in the 51 to 100 employee category. And the reason for that is that there are frequently companies that may have been established for some period of time, but whose competitive position has been eroded, and adding nanotechnology or improving their products or creating new products using nanotechnology might enhance and preserve the jobs of persons in those companies with 51 to 100 employees. So that provision is in the legislation.
So, well, thank you for the explanation. So what I'm hearing you say is that perhaps under subdivision 3, under definitions, that really what you're going to do is define small business in two ways. One as a small corporation, proprietorship, or partnership with fewer than 50 employees, and then a second definition, a Minnesota business corporation, sole proprietorship or partnership that has 51 to 100, and you're leaving in two small eyes that demonstrates current financial adversity or risk, and take out the all the dollar.
Madam pages. Chair, mm-hmm. Yes, leaving lines 2.2, 2.3, 2.4 for larger companies. I think the assumption is if they're a true startup working in a lab or a garage, colloquially speaking, they're probably less than 50 employees. And are probably could benefit just from the good graces of the development fund. Somebody with 51 to 100 employees is probably not a startup. They've probably been around the block for a couple of times. And so leaving the other qualifier in, that they need to demonstrate that there either is a current financial adversity or a major prospect of aiding the business's long-term outlook, gives the commissioner and at Deed some latitude to work with and some peg to hang his rationale on. You follow me?
I believe I am.
But once again, we would just drop line 2.7, 2.8. And I think I'm about prepared to make an author's oral amendment.
Members, do you have any, do you want to make any comment on this before an author's amendment? Because it does look like that's forthcoming. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts about that you'd like to share? No? It looks like we're ready. Would you like to...
Madam Chair, I would offer an author's amendment to strike line 1.24, line 2.1, line 2.7, and line 2.8. And I don't believe, asking staff, I don't believe we have to renumber anything else in the bill.
Okay, there would be the need of some, well, we'll need, the when it's engrossed, the whole thing will have to be renumbered. But for now, I think there'll be some grammatical or punctuation errors that will be fixed
okay. By
the reviser. But is everyone comfortable with the amendment? It will strike 1.24, 2.1, 2.7, and 2.8. All those in favor of the author's amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Your amendment has passed. Are there any other questions about the bill as a whole and the intent? And could you just describe for me the entire appropriation, because you have money mentioned in several portions of here. Looking, is this $417,500 for 08? And again for 09, and I believe is this one 3 years, or was that the last one? So 2 years. So during the biennium, does that ring true? Okay, with the amendment, I'm sorry, you're correct. It would be 517 because of the initial A2 amendment that you passed. I just want to make sure I'm understanding the total package.
Madam Chair, this is actually a two-year appropriation that's being asked for. So after 09, if this fund is as successful as we think, we'll have a reason to come back, brag about it, and ask for continuation. Otherwise, it is a two-year appropriation totaling over the 2 years from the general fund, $1,035,000 or $517,500.
Okay.
Approximately per year in the biennium.
Thank you for the clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Members, any questions for Representative Beard or his testifiers? I don't see any questions, so I believe that.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to renew my motion that the bill pass
right,
as amended and be referred to finance.
Okay, we have a motion to. Move House File 1637 as amended and move it to finance and be recommended to pass. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much and congratulations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank
House File 1637 has passed. The announcements were read at the beginning of the hour, so I don't have any others. Is there any other business anyone has to bring before the committee today? Seeing none, we will adjourn.